Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean, I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City,
the Shambhala New York podcast.
I am Dave, your host. This is the podcast. I threw my back out a couple days ago, pulled a muscle, bent down at the wrong time. Luckily, I was home and not, in the middle of Broadway. But I was home and bent down, couldn't get up, and could not stand for about 36 hours. And there's a process you go through when you're in this kind of situation. Maybe you've had a similar situation. Any kind of injury or sickness where you're confined, where you're stuck. First, you think about all the things that you have to do and you can't do. So there's a panic, which gradually leads to frustration and then anxiety. And then at some point, you're just there. You're just laying there. You've accepted it. You are wearing the reality that nothing's happening. There's nothing that you can do. You just have to wait. And what an interesting time to put up this particular podcast, this particular talk by David Perrin. This was a talk he gave back in late January, a couple months ago, called Doing Versus Being. How much does the being aspect of meditation manifest in one's doing? What is one's attitude towards doing, needing to do things, needing to get things done, and how does meditation affect that attitude? So this is a great talk. So let's hear it. We have mini classes, as you know. Meditation in Everyday Life, our introductory course, begins on April 6th. That's a four-week course. Visit us at ny.shambhala.org to register for that or any other program, class, or weekend retreat. David?
Is there anyone here that is the least bit conflicted that you chose to come here to do nothing? Yeah?
I would say my main conflict after this weekend especially is feeling like there's still a lot to do and I've got a particular agenda that I have not been able to get through during the day because of work. And there's a lot of other things to do.
Yeah. Worthwhile things.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I feel similar. Others, or anybody conflicted?
I'm conflicted that I can't do nothing.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'm here.
Conflicted that you can't do nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I come to try to do nothing, but usually stuff's still keeps happening.
Something's happening. Anybody else?
Strangely enough, I've been feeling incredibly helpless over the past few days, and I realized while sitting here that this was something that I could do.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Even coming tonight, or literally just the act of sitting down.
Maybe it's about the intention. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah.
What it is, but good. Or the group. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. That's interesting. Yeah.
I feel. I just came from a meeting. My creative work is going really well, and my practice is going really well. I've raised the bar on my practice the last couple of years, and it's having a real shift in my life from my head to my heart. My sense of self is more in my heart. But I just came from this meeting that was really intense, and it was successful, and it was positive, and just some amazing folks working together creatively. And I'm just having a little trouble slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where the conflict is. I mean, and it's not really a conflict. It just takes time for me to kind of glide down.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea that it takes time, and maybe we've been doing meditation long enough so that there is some trust that the spinningness quality does slow down, but that we also may find, even if whether we have experience or we don't, we may find that we're not sure if it's going to slow down. This is the most important thing you can do.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. So there's a couple things that I want to tease out in that. One is do. So the founder, this gentleman above my right shoulder, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who's the founder of this lineage of Shambhala centers, he used to talk about the traditional understanding of meditation, which is called dhyana or samadhi in Sanskrit. It's not a verb. We make everything a verb, right? And even to meditate, I'm going to go meditate. I'm going to go to meditate. But it's not a verb, it's a noun. Which I thought was interesting, because coincidentally Liz Reed's talk was, is basic goodness a verb or a noun? And so independent, even before I knew that, I was thinking about this idea that meditation is a noun, it's not a verb. So meditation has no objective. There is nothing to do. That's a little uncomfortable. Because we were all sitting here just trying to do something, right? Follow the breath, work with our mind, work with thoughts, but then this, you know, meditation master comes along and says, well, there's actually no objective. There's nothing, there's not even a reference point. This is one of these things where we get the instructions and okay, I sit in a particular posture, I follow the breath, I work with my thoughts. The breath is ostensibly a reference point, but it's not really a reference point. And part of the reason that we can tell that it's not really a reference point is because when we go to focus on the breath, a lot of other stuff comes up, right? So sometimes there are particular meditations that use a phrase or a mantra. You might meditate on a physical object, a candle. But when we practice using the breath as the object of meditation, we really begin to sink into this idea that there's not even a reference point for this. And furthermore, what this gentleman pointed to was this idea that we've never actually really done this in our lives. We've never sat. We've never sat still and done nothing. So we don't even have experience doing it, which is part of what makes it feel not so easy, right? We don't have experience doing nothing. Closest that we've gotten, in my case, you know, it's like times where you're traveling, right? And you hurry to get to the airport, and you're rushing to get out of the cab because you're not sure if you're going to make it, and then you get to the security line to go through security, and what happens? Boom, you stop. And you do mostly nothing on that line. There's secretly a little reference point going on. I'm standing on this line to get through that checkpoint so I can get to my flight. And the same thing that happens after you get through security. You're walking, and maybe you lose track of time. You're looking at the magazines, whatnot, and you realize, oh, shit, I got to get online for the plane. And you get online for the plane, and then everyone's sitting there. And then you go out, and you're on the tarmac for an hour, and you're doing nothing. So life is a little bit a series of those things, right? I mean, that's one analogy. But that's whether we're at work, right, there's times where we're very busy and productive at work, and there's times where work is really boring. There's time in relationship where it's magical. you're going on dates with this person, you're exploring new parts of the city, you might go on a trip. It's just like eating dinner at home is just scrumptious. And then a few months later, you're looking at that person going, maybe I should call my friends. Because I don't even know where to suggest for us to do or go out to, or, you know, we've watched all the shows that seem interesting. And so what meditation is it's a state of being. So we're practicing a state of being. And now I want to get back to this what you said before, this idea of it's the most important thing to do. Because it might have something to do with cultivating a state of being, a way of being. And that can sound a little bit esoteric sometimes, right? Because again, we get tripped up a little bit on this idea of, well, what am I doing? I'm just existing. And particularly, it gets provocative when we say, well, but there's a lot to do, right? There's a lot going on at work. There's a lot that we have to do at home. And right now in the world, I don't know if you feel like I do, but there's a lot to do in this world. There's a lot that needs to be done and figured out. So it really becomes almost this paradoxical quality of why would we sit still and do nothing with no objective when all these things need our attention? Why? Do you have a thought?
I do.
Yeah?
A video I was watching of Chogyam Trungpa, and he said, just get yourself on the cushion, because everything you'll do it better afterward.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one more sec. Why do you think he said that?
Because I think, for me, when I spend time being, then my doing is more authentic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a relationship between being and doing. Okay. Anybody else had a thought when that came up? Yes.
I feel like when I sit here, I'm able to be satisfied.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I started coming here that I really understood what it was like to be satisfied.
And what does that feel like, feeling satisfied?
Like the effect or the actual physical feeling?
The actual physical feeling.
I don't know if...
It's hard to put words to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like this kind of deep, profound, settled...
Uh-huh.
I'm not like scrambling, searching, even though, like you said, I'm like, you know, constantly emailing senators, like in the vain hope that the world won't be destroyed.
Yeah.
But I guess you're all doing that too. but somehow in that, I feel the satisfaction of being connected to the earth and the other humans in it, and also just, I don't know, just living without this searching. And it doesn't mean I don't have goals, and it doesn't mean I don't try, but I'm not skittering.
Is there a correlation here between this idea of like it's the only thing to that I can do, kind of?
Not so much the only thing I can do, but it's something that I can do.
Something you can do.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So, yeah, why don't we pass it here? I'm totally putting you on the spot, which is like completely horrible and in front of 100 people.
So I feel like indeed the two are related in some sense. Maybe I'm giving the classic response, but action, I feel, is grounded in meditation. Meditation is sort of touching base with our basic being before we can go out and act, you know. And action without this grounding feels like it's just a shower of decisions. Sometimes it's split second. Do I do this? Do I do that? And having a little bit of grounding and developing some insight into things helps steer a better path and with more peaceful mind and not being tossed around by choices. And not to say that this is a magical solution and all of a sudden all the choices will become the correct ones.
Right.
I was actually very struck. Recently I've been reading Trungpa Rinpoche's early biography, Born in Tibet, where he has to basically take a group out of Tibet and escape, go through very difficult, very dangerous mountain passes, and of course he's this incarnate lama, everybody turns to him. But there's kind of this constant feeling that, you know, there's decisions to be made at every point. Do we take this mountain pass? You know, if we go through there, the Chinese might arrest us. And this kind of constant, you know, and you'd think that there's serene, enlightened person. Nevertheless, you know, he's led his group to safety. And you can see how inspiring his whole, you know, it's not magic, but it's nevertheless there's some kind of very basic assertiveness about, you know, taking it. So I was really struck by it, you know, because he's incarnate lama, but then he's like, we're facing this kind of present political situation, you know, and over there they're facing people with guns, you know, who are at them, ready to shoot them. So I'm putting my own awareness of a political reality in perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. And so what you're referring to is that when as a Tibetan, as a young, relatively young leader of his community, a 20-year-old, he had to flee the Chinese communist invasion of Tibet in order to make it to safety in India. And there were many people in his party that perished, that didn't make that trip. And it was basically like they were climbing over mountains to escape, and didn't always necessarily know which direction to turn. And yet this is the person who came to the United States eventually and talked about basic goodness, said that everyone has this innate quality of wakefulness and goodness and sanity and dignity. After having many of the people having to flee his homeland, never to go back again, and losing many of his loved ones. And having to make many decisions along the way, not only in that journey, but then when he got to India and eventually to England and came to the United States. But then he would come and teach that the most important thing we can do, kind of you're saying, the most important thing we can do is come here and do nothing. Full well knowing that, you know, okay, our current political situation is what it is. We've been facing difficult situations for a while. And, you know, decisions continuously need to be made in our own life and in the life of our society. So I don't want to, like, completely harp on this, but I do want to draw out this idea that it's a big conundrum, this idea of why would we choose to sit on this cushion and really do nothing and not make any of those decisions, right? Because the instruction is, what's the instruction? When thoughts come up, what do? Label them thinking and do what? Mm-hmm. And do we do that once or twice? Once or twice, and then we're like, okay, now the meditative absorption, the equipoise can begin. I've done a few labels, and I'm good. Pema Chodron has an interest. She talks about meditation. When you're not meditating, you're out there. She says the practice of meditation at that point becomes opinions. It becomes opinions. So the same way that we're noticing the thoughts and we're saying, okay, that's a thought, and I'd love to keep going with that thought, actually. Can I just get a little bit more of that cake? Or just like, yeah, no, fine, I'll leave it. Like, I don't need to deal with you. happy to come back to the breath. We're not sitting like this, although we might be sitting at work or on the train or whatever, but what we are doing, the same thing that we're doing on the cushion, is that we're having a lot of ideas about things and we have a lot of opinions. And nowadays, when we start talking about the political context and the state of the world, it's sort of impossible not to have so many opinions. But what Pema Chodron was saying, she's this well-known author in this tradition, in this lineage, is she was basically saying that the objective is to notice those opinions and not build on them, right? Not say, oh, that's a good opinion or that's a bad opinion. Because that's typically our practice. And particularly when we face difficult situations where something is seemingly going horribly wrong, opinions become our seeming sanctuary and refuge. Right? Doesn't it feel good to hate somebody? Or doesn't it feel good to fall in love with somebody? We have, so one of the things that the teachers in this have passed down to us is a set of teachings called the six ways of ruling. We also talk about the six ways of becoming an authentic leader. And leadership in this case is just leading your life. It's being a leader in each of our own lives. Rulership is an interesting notion, right? It's an interesting notion of what it means to be a ruler of your own domain. Particularly because we have such a weird relationship right now with rulership and people in power. So if we transfer that notion of, rather than thinking about it, someone out there that has power and dominion over something and having a particular opinion about how we feel about that, taking that concept of dominion, almost like we were a monarch of our own situation, and then how would we act? How would we act in the context of our own life? So the first of these three, I'm going to share three of them with you. And they're sometimes done in different order. But the first one I want to share with you is this idea of being true. That the authentic leader or the ruler is one who is true. And in this case of true, it's very much what it means to sit on the cushion and do nothing and sit. Sometimes they say sit like a mountain. Sit like a mountain. Right? Nature is true. Nature doesn't have opinions about things. Whether it's an actual mountain or a tree or a stream, it's true. And there's a real quality of sort of immovability and patience. So one of the things that we're cultivating in this sitting practice of doing nothing is like an immanent patience. It's an immovability. And it might be posited that the only way to do that is to sit still and do nothing. It's the only way we can make a relationship to what is true. Another quality is benevolence. Benevolence. Benevolence in this case has, I'll use the example of the march this weekend. So my experience of being at the Million Women's March was that there was fierce gentleness. There was fierce gentleness. There was a sense of presence and commitment to non-aggression. Okay, there was a very low police presence. I saw no antagonisms. It had a very gentle quality, but it was also very sharp and fierce at the same time. And that's benevolence. Benevolence is not just, well, everyone, I'm going to be kind to everyone no matter what and allow people to do whatever they're going to do. It's no, I'm going to see your humanity, I'm going to see your basic goodness, and I am going to share what's true for me. I'm not going to hold back. I'm not going to aggress on you with that, but I'm not going to hold back. And that leads into the third one, which is genuine. So the genuineness of an authentic leader or ruler is someone who knows what to they know how to discern between what to accept and what to reject. So as we've related to true and benevolence, in genuine, what's so interesting about this, right, is that our values, what we believe deep down inside to be right and true, it's not up for debate. Like the values at that march or the values where someone is standing up for whatever they believe in, those values are not up for debate. How we work with that is up for debate. And we certainly have a long way to go as a society in figuring out how to talk to each other and how to accomplish what for each one of us is true. And I would articulate that that what's true and genuine is knowing when there's suffering and how to either avert suffering or ameliorate suffering, make suffering better. At least in this context, right? You come to a Buddhist center, that's essentially what it boils down to, is how do we reduce and hopefully eliminate people's suffering? And so what emerges, and it's almost this magic quality, what emerges in how we use these six ways of becoming an authentic ruler is that by being still and doing nothing, there's a certain innate intelligence and discernment that arises. And that's where the magic quality comes in. That's where it's like, well, how did I just know what to do? How was I in that situation that was very heated and there were a lot of strong opinions swirling around me, but I actually felt really clear about what I needed to do? Right? So I know I need to make the call to the senator. That's just what I need to do. There's a lot of other stuff that comes later in terms of, like, are they going to even listen? Who's really in favor of this? Who really wants to move forward with this? How do we find our way through this? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing enough? Am I doing too little? All those things come after that initial spark of intelligence that says, I have to do something because this is what I believe in. So there's a very interesting quality between the things that are true for us that are not up for debate, they're not up for discussion. And then the practice of doing nothing or letting go of everything that we seemingly believe in. And I'm not an expert on this, right? Because I feel the same fears and hopelessness and sort of what do we do and how do we respond and how do we react and how do we begin to feel like, you know, I mean, I have a 5-year-old daughter. You know, she has a feeling of kind of like where, even though she can't articulate it, it's like what is this society? Where are we going? Do I feel proud to live in this country or not? She's 5. Right? So none of us are immune. Wherever we fall on the spectrum of how we see things or how we think things are going to be better moving forward, wherever we fall on that, none of us is immune to this idea of like, oh shit. A lot of change is happening and it's happening fast. Right? And yet, what I'm offering, and I think the reason that Trungpa Rinpoche said that the most important thing you can do is sit still, is because it's the only way to begin to relate to what's true for us. And then by extension, and it's a whole other talk, right, is this idea of then in benevolence and caring for other people and developing compassion, that all stems from beginning to relate to our own situation. If we don't relate to having compassion for our own feelings and our own confusion, I would say it might be a little bit possible with other people, but mostly not. So what do you think?
I was meditating on Friday, and I was thinking, I wish like a politician were here instead. Like, I've meditated before, and I wish someone who'd never done it before, who is making all these really big decisions, were here instead. But I was still had to sit there for the class, so it was really interesting. But, yeah.
What was the class?
It was a meditation class.
Was it here?
No, I was traveling.
Oh, okay. And so you were kind of hoping that someone who... And why did that occur to you?
I just felt like I'm not doing enough, like what we've been talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like I wish I could just like grab a politician off the street and take them in the class instead of me.
Instead of you?
Yeah.
Because they would have the opportunity for what?
Like the opportunity to sit maybe for the first time, or maybe to, like, they're making all these decisions that affect everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's a great thought. So there are politicians who meditate, and we have actually an attorney general in this state who's sat in this room and spoken, who's a meditator. So there are a few out there. And, you know, to a certain degree, I think the impulse is really right, because whether it's meditation or it's just some form of self-reflection where someone has an idea of relating to something that might not be comfortable in their own experience is, I think that's a certain accountability that hopefully we begin to figure out how to demand. Others, does this sense of, please, the sense of, I'm just curious about, you know, this idea of that the only way to get in touch with what's true for us is to do nothing.
When you spoke about our values aren't up for debate, but it's how we interact with each other that is, I had the question that I couldn't answer myself of what do we do when those values are diametrically opposed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good question, and I think it's why I was invoking, and I mean, it's true for me, I think, this idea that the bottom line or the watershed of that is this idea of reducing suffering and caring for beings and life that is in distress. You know, it is an interesting notion of how do we fight for, if that is the watershed or that's the foundation, the basis upon which we want to not only make the case for, but really fight for that being, and how we do that in a way that strips opinions out of it. Part of me thinks that can only be done face to face with another human being. And, you know, we so often do so much not face to face nowadays that we're having to come to terms with the idea of what it means to be face to face with people and in a room with other people. I mean, you all made the choice to come here tonight, right? And so this idea of people choosing to be with one another, I recently, as a kind of Christmas present, I found an organization in Florida that's called To the Village Square. And the whole reason for that organization exists is to sort of have bipartisan gatherings where they talk about social issues and party and have fun. I mean, they kind of try to like have humor in it. But their intention is to bring people into the same room and just ask them of their willingness to do that to start with. But the other thing about, I think, that happened, my feeling from what happened on Saturday was that there were a lot of people there who were coming because they knew it was true for them, and they had all different expressions of that, but they needed to be together to feel a sense of, we call it wind horse in this tradition. They needed to feel the energy of other, rather than feel in isolation with what we have. So isolation has become really a trigger thing. You know, in Buddhism, we talk about the Buddha, who's the teacher. We talk about the Dharma, which is the teachings, and the Sangha. It's a three-legged stool, and any one of those falls out, and none of it works. So I think this face-to-face connection and creating community, two people at a time, but then growing it from there in order to build the energy around what we both feel is true and needs to be done, is becomes more and more central. Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, going off of what she was saying, I just had this thought that there's this line, and I think it's from the Prayer of St. Francis, but it says, "Seek that I might, hope that I might seek to understand instead of being understood."
Mm.
And so that's been something that's been resonating with me a lot. And I think in this context of like, sitting and being, I think often we're so out in the world and trying to get our opinions and our way of being just out and interject it into everyone else. And so to be able to sit there and listen and be kind of changes the dynamic.
I think that's absolutely right. Because then, like you're saying, you're suggesting it starts with us, right? Can we sit and be with ourselves? The thing about the practice of opinion noticing, and you can try it when you go home tonight. Do the practice of opinions. It's hard, it's sort of hard to do, you know, but if you remember to do it, you can just try to do it for 5 minutes, or just as you walk down the street, noticing the things we're drawn to and the things that we want to push away and the things that we just kind of stick our head in the sand about. Those are the only three options when it comes to opinions. But yes, can we cultivate being there for ourselves, listening to our own opinions about things? And that's why meditation, it's like, yes, it can feel grounded and settled, but it can also kind of feel like, I'm so sick and tired of my own opinions. You know what I mean? It's like me with the New York Times. I'm so sick and tired of the New York Times. You know what I mean? I read it all the time, but I just find myself feeling like, is it true? You know what I mean? Like, and how does it inform my own, the truth within myself? I'm calling out one particular periodical, but it could be any one, because we live in a society where a lot of people make money by giving their opinions, and we consume those opinions. So not only are we doing it with ourselves all the time, but now we're bombarded by it in the world. And this is another thing in terms of kind of like, how do we move forward? There's now more and more, you know, literally studies, but certainly reports and articles being written about what's the practice of disciplining ourselves about exposure to that stuff? You know what I mean? So meditation is that. It's just that. You know, it can be framed in that particular context. But I think it's crucial. It's like more and more, almost like a survival feeling. Does anyone have that feeling? Like surviving this situation means me having some sense of where my boundaries are around exposure and relating to my own opinions and then relating to other people's opinions. Because I can only take in so much and still navigate my course forward and feel healthy about that.
Kind of in relation to that, I think that sitting helps so much with the fear that might develop with the thoughts that arise when you think about your opinions. Yeah. I think sometimes like the deeper reflections that this prompts, that can be kind of a scary place to lean into. So yeah. I think this is kind of a portal into kind of touching those things really lightly.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, making it more of a production than it needs to be, I guess, yes. In your own mind.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of, you know, these methods can help with the, you know, the fear of a lot of what we're talking about.
I think that's really well said, addressing that fear. And, you know, so benevolence, one of those three qualities of the authentic leader, the benevolence and that, like, the fierce gentleness, right? So the leaning in. So I'm going to relate to my fear, but I'm going to go into it rather than back away from it. But I'm doing that with such a heart of, you know, tenderness and friendliness towards myself. Next week, so I'm going to be back next week for those of you who are like, oh God, we wait another month before I come back here. But yeah, I think that's really what I want to talk about next week, is this, the friendliness and the familialness of this. Like, if we can't have, and that's literally in this idea of doing nothing, but when we do come back to the breath, how do we do it? Are we like, oh, you were thinking again? No, or it was like, okay, it's cool, it's all right, that's out, like, ooh, it's a little sensitive, and let me come back to the feeling of my body breathing. Yeah, good, very good point.
Thank you for the wonderful talk. I think the worst thing at this point we could do is do something, because it would create more anger and more confusion. And if we start dealing with anger and confusion, we are going to be the ones who are going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go into a complete different way. I would sit and I would practice loving kindness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though that might be very difficult for us, but I think that's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very can be a very effective thing to do, and because loving kindness, right, is the sending out of that kindness and that love, and traditionally we do it towards people that we like, people that we don't like, people we're neutral towards, and whole groups of people.
Yes.
What is interesting, though, is that, you know, tomorrow morning, I don't want to get too personal, but what do you have going on tomorrow morning?
Myself?
Yeah.
What else to do than being with you?
What's it? No, yeah. Well,
what else to do?
I mean, so what I'm saying is, like, so for me, I'll just use myself. So I have to get up, right? My kids are going to get up.
Right.
We got to figure out what's for breakfast. They got to figure out what to wear. My daughter still refuses to get dressed without someone helping her pick out her. And we got to get to the bus stop, and we got to get them to school, and then I've got to get to work. And so you sort of see where I'm going for this, is that actually we have to do a lot just to maintain our situation, you know. But now I think many of us are feeling we have an added layer that we can't necessarily be silent. We don't want to aggress. We don't want to contribute to the aggression that may be existing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we don't feel like we can stand by while that's happening. So we're in this conundrum of, like, well, yeah, we don't want to contribute to confusion, but we also don't want to condone confusion.
Correct.
So where we see confusion, it's the impetus to do the loving kindness practice is to reduce suffering. That's what we feel. So if that's what's true for us, we can do the loving kindness practice, and then we're asking ourselves, well, so what more can I do, because I don't have a choice not to do. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
Just like I don't have a choice tomorrow morning to get those kids to school and myself to work. I don't have a choice about that. I mean, I do, but I would just be completely dropping the ball. So because I feel responsible and I want the best for them and my family, I'm going to put the next step forward. So we're doing all the time. We can never get out of doing. But the choices that we make of how to spend our time and what to do come out of shamatha, peaceful abiding practice, come out of loving kindness practice. And then it's just like this sort of notion of, okay, that's the next thing I have to do. Yeah.
That's how you create your own karma, basically. That's your good karma.
That's that. Yet cause and effect. And so contributing to the effects that we want to see in the world.
Correct.
Because it is very important to do loving kindness, and it's also important for us to, you know, to do the best that we can to stop harmful actions from happening, right? We don't want those effects either. So each one of us has to make a decision on what's right for us to help cultivate the world that we want to live in. And it's going to look differently for everyone in this room. What we're really talking about is the basis from which we're doing that, a feeling of groundedness, sanity, okay, I can weather things that come my way, and I can still move forward and be helpful. Be helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Yes, I think sitting has helped me be more of a happy warrior, or at least an expectant warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, things go bad, right? Less like, I can't believe, or it's not supposed to, right?
Yeah.
And I had a bad 2016.
Yeah.
Until 4 days after the election, I said for 8 years, I implement Obamacare for children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was much easier to say than like my title and what I do and blah, blah, blah. Like, I implement Obamacare for children. And then 4 days later, the call came, nothing will move forward. You know, mm-hmm. It is the purview of the incoming administration that blah, blah, blah. It was bad, you know, but I think your practice makes you less surprised that there's work to do.
That's a good point. I think the surprise.
It's hard to be surprised when you sit with yourself so often and you're elated and you're lost and you're mad and you're all of those things in about 3.5 minutes, you know. It's just not as surprising to me that there's work that needs to get done here,
yeah,
you know? Yeah. So I think that's just what I think, what my meditation lets me know is, yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's got to get done on really small levels and really big levels, and you just take it as it comes.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and because that's kind of like the hidden secret about opinions is that when we are entertaining a lot of opinions, we're easily surprised. And we're easily thrown off of our seat. And opinions are very entertaining. And we have to come to terms with how juicy they are and how much we like to have them. The word that Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, this is a great way to finish. The word that you used, happy, did you say happy?
Or I said I feel happy like warrior? A happier warrior.
Yeah, he used the word cheerful. So one can be cheerful and and feel sad. One can feel defeated and be cheerful, which I find really provocative because I sure as hell want to be depressed. You know what I mean?
I'm excited we could turn it back forever. It's so much harder to fight in the corners of conversation, but he's put it directly in front of us.
Yeah.
So here's our opportunity.
And our opportunity to cultivate this idea of not so much positivity. Again, it's not positivity because it's not like, well, if it's only this, like only this has to work. It's cheerful about our efforts. It's cheerful exertion. Cheerful exertion. So if anything comes out of doing nothing and sitting here with no objective, hopefully it's cheerful exertion. So do your opinions practice tonight and tomorrow. Relate to cheerful exertion. Come back here and practice with other human beings or go somewhere to practice with other human beings. Have a dinner party. You know what I mean? Hold hands together before you eat. These are become the radical acts at this point. Thank you very much, and very nice to be with you.
Thank you, David. I was happy to hear that talk. Hey, visit us at ny.chambala.org. For more information about classes and weekend retreats, again, Meditation in Everyday Life, our introductory course begins April 6th. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come stop by, say hi. Our Tuesday night Dharma gathering happens every Tuesday, except April 4th. But otherwise, every Tuesday, you can come say hi, meet the people, meet the teachers, hear these talks live and in person. It's a good time. Email us at podcast@chambalanyc.org. your questions, comments, suggestions. Tell your friends. Take care of yourself. Don't get injured. But if you do, it's all right. Just relax. Later.